Case for argument, United States versus Johnson. Ms. Griffin.
Good morning, Your Honor.
Good morning.
This case concerns the search of a red Corolla that took place on February 16th of 2000. And it's a case in which the district court judge specifically found in his ruling suppressing the evidence of the search that there was a reasonable basis to believe that that car and that the occupant of that car, the driver of that car, had just participated in a drug transaction. The court went on to find, however, that even though there was a reasonable basis to believe that the driver of the car had just engaged in a drug deal, there was no probable cause to search the actual car for contraband or evidence of drug trafficking. And it's the government...
Let's get into the detail. When he was stopped after this chase, he wasn't arrested and because it would interfere with, you know, it would tip him off and so on. But I don't understand. Was he stopped? Who stopped him?
There were a number of both local law enforcement officials and Drug Enforcement Administration agents surveilling the drug transaction, and the actual traffic stop was affected by police officers. And then they were joined by Drug Enforcement Administration
agents. But he didn't realize that there were drug people on his tail?
Well, it's the position of the government that he, in fact, did realize that he was the subject of surveillance and that that is the reason for his erratic driving.
But then why didn't they arrest him then? Why did they give him these two traffic tickets instead? That is, if they knew that he knew that they were investigating him, what was the point of this cat and mouse game?
It's my understanding that there was a larger scope to the investigation, and that at the time, and your Honor is correct, he was not indicted until the following year, that there were other individuals they were looking at, there were other aspects to the investigation, and that they had made a decision to bring down indictments and make arrests at a subsequent period of time, and ideally this individual would have thought that he had only been under surveillance during that one transaction, would not know about the recording, would not know about the surveillance of his co-defendant. The investigation had a scope wider than this February 16th transaction.
The number 20 is in there. Was it 20 agents or 20 cars? Or
it's an approximate number. The testimony at this press hearing was not...
Agents or cars?
I believe it was agents and not cars.
I would hope. Otherwise, you'd have a traffic jam right there on the spot.
I think typically there would have been approximately two agents per car. There were probably some surveillance vehicles. There was specific testimony at the suppression hearing about what kinds of vehicles were out there, but it's actually not uncommon to have that number of agents involved. They're not all sitting on the same block. They are in the vicinity. They're standing by in case a large number of arrests are going to be made. Some of them are operating. There was a recording device being used. Some of them are operating that equipment. So it's not as though each and every one of them had a pair of binoculars and was focused on the transaction itself. There would have been a very small number of officers for fear of putting the defendants, obviously, on the trail of those officers actually.
Trial court found that there was, at the time of the stop, a probable cause for an arrest. Am I correct?
The trial court found, it didn't specifically say, use those exact words. The trial court did say that, did note that, that there was reasonable basis to believe the occupant of the Corolla had been involved in a drug transaction, and then
that's probable cause for an arrest. Isn't
it suggests as much.
It doesn't suggest. It says if you have probable cause to believe somebody's committed a crime, you have probable cause to make an arrest.
The trial court did note that and went on to note more in the negative that because he had not been arrested.
As I understand, yeah, that was the beef, that he didn't arrest him. But if he had arrested him, there would have been a search incident to arrest. But he had the right to arrest. And if I read what the judge says, he said that unless you make the arrest at that time, you have no right to search. But if you have probable cause for the arrest, as you do, and you make the arrest, now you have probable cause to search.
I believe that's a fair reading of what the district court said.
Well, in effect, what he says is delaying the arrest negates the right to search.
I think, again, those aren't the exact words that he
said. I think what Judge Cannelli found is that although there existed probable cause, both for the traffic stop and to believe that Johnson participated in the drug transaction. There was no probable cause to believe that the car contained evidence or contraband, because no one actually observed Johnson delivering anything to the buys, and because the transaction was over.
And it's the government's position that's a very strained reading of the undisputed facts, because in the first place, the court seems to be saying that a greater restraint on Mr. Johnson's liberty would have given the government greater rights to conduct a search, and you know, the government did not have the right to preserve its investigation and simply impose a lesser restraint of issuing the traffic citations and searching the car, which I think is paradoxical. I also think that the court is simply incorrect, given the facts of the case, that there was more probable cause with respect to Mr. Johnson than the car. In fact, the opposite is true. As the defendant has pointed out in his own brief, there was not specific information about Mr. Femi Johnson, the defendant, but there was information about this car that was very specific.
Let me take you somewhere else for just an instant.
Of course.
Was there anything in the district court record or any testimony placing the reliability of the dog or his handler at issue?
Not a word, Your Honor. There was nothing in the defendant's moving papers. At no point did the defendant contest that a dog alert, in fact, occurred. In fact, as the record indicates, the defendant attached a report to his moving papers demonstrating that the alert had occurred and never calling that into question.
But the dog is the icing on the cake, to make a disgusting mixed metaphor. But let me ask you, though, could you dispel this mystery of dog alerts? What is it? What does the dog do? Does it bark, or is there some mystery here?
Like Agent
whispers
Stewart.
To its handler, or something like that.
Like Agent Stewart, I'm not going to profess any particular expert knowledge of dog alerts. I think there are two different ways that they do, though, just as a matter of anecdotal experience. I think they sometimes scratch and act excited when they've alerted to narcotics, and I think some dogs do bark. As the supplemental materials that are in the record indicate, this particular dog had a perfect record of alerting to narcotics.
I always thought that they pointed like a bird dog, you know.
Sometimes they eat them.
No, I'm disillusioned.
Whatever it is.
Do we know what kind of dog it, what breed?
Your Honor, I don't know off the top of my head, but I do believe that there were some supplemental affidavits filed which the court declined to consider, but which indicate a significant amount of information about the dog himself and about his
record
and expertise.
And so on. No.
I do know that he had a perfect record, sure. But I don't recall the details of his pedigree.
Great nose. Why don't you save yourself some time for rebuttal?
Thank you, Ron.
Like a wine.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Griffin. Ms. Gambino?
Good morning, Judge Posner, Judge Bauer, and Judge Robner. The district court in this case did not abuse his discretion in finding that there was not sufficient probable cause to search this car. In fact, he was following the government's lead.
Well, I must say, I find this impossible to understand. Given that Johnson had some role in this drug offense, you'd expect something to be in his car, right?
No.
Why else was he there?
There are a number of different roles that he could have had in this offense that would not involve his car.
Well, yeah, but you don't have to eliminate every possibility before you have probable cause.
No, but when you have people who are observing the scene and there is no transaction or no evidence or no observation of anything happening, anything being taken in to the car or taken out of the car that has nothing to do with the car. In fact, the agent testified on both occasions, nothing was, they observed the car, they observed the people at the car, nothing was taken out, nothing was put in.
Well, how near are they? And do they have telescopes or what? I mean, it's not that easy. Surveillance doesn't mean you actually have a clear view of everything that's going on.
Well, the government can't have its cake and eat it, too. I mean, the agent on the one hand testifies, well, someone was near enough to see someone reach into the car or reach a hand into the same place where the driver had, but not close enough to see whether that same hand he saw reach into the car had taken
anything out. But what would a hand, why would the hand be reaching in? To shake hands or what? You don't stick your hand into a car, usually, unless you have something in your hand, right?
Well, you might do any number of things.
Like what?
There was nothing seen being handed into the car. There was nothing seen being taken out.
Would you say that it was at least reasonable to think it's highly probable something was in his hand when he put it in?
No, it's not reasonable to infer that if he observed it and said that there was nothing observed going in, nothing observed coming out. What
would be the circumstance under which you put your hand into the car through the window, but there's nothing in it? That is the only thing I can think of is shaking hands, which doesn't...
You could be shaking hands, you could be looking at something, you could be moving something.
Yeah, you could be moving.
Ms. Gambino, aren't you controlled by... These are controlled by.
The controlled by was between the co-defendant and the cooperator. There was no control. They didn't even know who the person in the car was. They didn't know anything except that the car was there.
But the DEA agents twice observed Mr. Johnson with the controlled buyer.
They twice observed the buyer talking to a black male. On one occasion, the first occasion, which the judge discounted because of its remoteness in time and because the transaction had finished, there was no testimony about who the person was beyond that it was a black male. On the second occasion, they saw the person who was involved in the controlled by...
You want to stand in front of the mic or else you won't be recorded.
Sorry. They saw the person approach the car and leave the car. They saw the person get the money from the controlled buyer. They saw the person take the money into the apartment building, but they never saw any transaction between the person who was buying the drugs and Mr. Johnson. They were asked specifically about that at the hearing, and they said no. Nothing was put into the car, nothing was taken out of the car. They were close enough to observe that somebody reached in, but not close enough before, or they did not see anybody bring anything out of the car. I think the judge's concern was that if your evidence of reality, what you actually observed, is not consistent with any transaction having taken place between those two individuals, then you can't infer something that obviously didn't happen.
Now, let's talk about the dog for a moment. Johnson never challenged the reliability of the dog, did he?
Well, Johnson attempted to challenge the reliability of the dog by questioning the agent who testified about the dog. Unfortunately, the agent did not provide detailed testimony. He provided a conclusory statement that the dog handler said he had alerted. He was at some distance from the scene, did not know himself how to interpret what dogs do or they don't do.
Well, my understanding was that he did not challenge the reliability of the dog, except to say that he didn't consent to the sniff. And, of course, consent is irrelevant because a dog's sniff, is not a search.
He attempted to challenge the reliability when the agent was on the stand testifying about it, but the question is
whether the government was on notice that this was something that it had to defend.
Well, certainly it was, because it is their burden.
I want you to walk in front of the mic.
It was their burden to prove that they had probable cause. And the dog was put into the
indicate to your opponent that you're not going to contest a particular sub-issue, then the opponent doesn't invest a lot in trying to prove it, right?
Well, by placing the entire nature of the search and saying that the dog sniff was not constitutional, you can't challenge the reliability of it until somebody is up there testifying about it.
Well, you can raise that issue ahead of time. You can say, we didn't give the consent to sniff, and even if we had, the dog didn't know what he was sniffing. It's a lousy sniffer, or a bad sniffer, or it's a phony sniff.
It
was a bad finger in a lineup. This dog doesn't know what he's doing, and so on. Now they can bring the dog... pedigree and his background into question. It's now brought into question. Now they can produce evidence to support that. But if all you do is say you didn't give the consent, what difference does it make? Why would they be excited about whether the dog's credentials were in question?
If they are going to rely on the dog sniff, it is their burden to prove.
No, but your attack on the dog sniff was simply that you didn't give consent, not that there was anything wrong with the sniff. And we're in the stage where we're not focusing now on the trial of the issue. It's a motion to suppress. And so the issue is yours to raise, not theirs, and you raised the issue that they didn't give consent. That they met. So now the question, now we raised during the hearing, or tried to raise, you say, or his honor took it out upon himself to say that the dog's reliability was not proven.
So we attempted to challenge the dog's reliability when the agent testified.
I understand, but on your motion to suppress, that was not even discussed.
The dog sniffed, the reliability of it wasn't the fact that it happened and that it was a violation.
That's right. That's right. They were perfectly willing to accept that burden of going forward and demonstrating that it didn't make any difference whether the consent was or was not, that they had a right to have the dog sniff.
And
not the reliability of the sniff itself. That wasn't an issue.
That's United States versus Place, Ms. Gambino, and it's a 1983 Supreme Court case. And
yes, I understand that. But when the credibility or the reliability of the dog sniff is placed in issue during the course of the hearing, then the government
No, that's too late. That's too late. Let me ask you, Ms. Griffin says, well, they could have arrested Johnson. If they had arrested him, they could have searched the car, right?
It was our position, although the court said there was reason to believe he had participated in the transaction, that they did not have particular suspicion with respect to him based on what they had
observed. Why? There's an unsuspicious interpretation of his behavior in relation to the drug offense that they observed?
Yes, because there was no interaction.
Well, what do you think he was doing there?
Mr. Johnson could have been doing any number of things.
Like what? What would be one thing that had nothing to do with the drug deal?
Mr. Mohammed could have called Mr. Johnson about some other issue that they had to deal with.
Really, you're in the middle of doing a drug deal and then you decide, what, you need your fingernails clipped or something and call your manicurist?
If they have
to meet
other
you
business,
at the drug deal, so I can do two
it
things
could
at
have
once.
Been a, it
multitasking.
Could have been, yes, it could have been a decoy. It could have been something else. It
a
could
decoy?
Have been
a what do you mean a decoy?
The person who arranged the drug deal himself could have called Mr. Johnson, who was a friend, to come by. It could have been a coincidence. It could have been planned so that somebody, if they were watching, would think that this person was involved when he wasn't. It could have been any number of things. The point was, at the hearing, no evidence was produced that showed any connection between
you
the
mean
two
that it's characteristic? Have you ever heard of a case where a drug dealer, in the course of a transaction, beckons over some innocent person in order to... I've never heard of that. They don't like to have strangers present when they're selling drugs. It'd be kind of ridiculous, wouldn't it?
At the time that he was seen present at the scene and the person who was engaged in the transaction was seen talking to him, the transaction had already taken place. And there was nothing to connect the person in the car with the transaction other than his presence on the scene. And that would not be sufficient to make him...
That is not what the trial court found, however.
No, the trial court found there was a reasonable belief that he was involved, but that the not reasonable belief that the car was involved or that there was evidence or contraband in the car.
But of course, his driving behavior afterwards would have supplied any missing probable cause to arrest him. Once he was arrested, they could have searched the car.
Actually, the court addressed that, and I believe addressed that correctly, that if you rely on speeding up and slowing down or speeding, which was the basis for saying that he had erratic behavior, then any car who is speeding is subject.
No, you can't separate things like that. You see a person, it looks as if he's involved in a drug transaction, and then all of a sudden, it looks as if he's spotted people following him, and he's gotten frightened and is driving erratically. Put those two things together, probable cause for arrest.
There was no arrest.
Yes, I know, but if there had been an arrest, then this car would have been searched. So what difference does it make that they didn't arrest him?
it makes a great deal of difference because they're asking the court to rely on inferences that contradict what they observed. And they're asking the court...
No, but if you went so far as to concede that he could have been arrested and then a search would have followed lawfully, then why should the fact that for some extraneous reasons they didn't want to arrest him, why should that redound to his benefit?
I don't concede that he could have been arrested.
Okay, if you don't concede that, then...
Okay, then we're doomed. No confession of error here.
No confession of error here.
Okay, thank you very much.
So we ask that the court affirm the judge's decision.
Ms. Griffin, do you, how much time does she have?
If you take more than 30 seconds, you may cut your own throat, but go ahead.
Thank you, Your Honors. I will be brief, and I will agree with the court's characterization of the situation here as a controlled delivery of narcotics. And it's a controlled delivery that was consummated at precisely the moment that the red Corolla arrived on the scene of the drug transaction. It has never been the government's position that cash necessarily changed hands in front of the surveillance officers. It makes no difference whether it did or did not. There need not be an actual showing of criminal activity witnessed by the surveillance officers. There need only be a reasonable inference from the circumstances that narcotics trafficking has taken place and that there might be evidence in the car. And of course, from these circumstances, the two narcotics transactions, the flight from law enforcement, and the uncontested evidence of a dog alert on the car, there such a reasonable inference could have been drawn, was drawn by the law enforcement officers, and should have been upheld by the district court. And we ask that this court reverse the suppression of the evidence and remand the case for further proceedings.
Thank you. Next case for argument is Berkey versus United States, and Mr. Schwartz. He's going to be on the telephone.
Can you get the phone? They don't have them yet. Can't get them.
Is it weather related? Is he on the telephone?
I'm sorry.